You are listening to the Down the Wormhole podcast, exploring the strange and fascinating relationship between science and religion. This week, our hosts are
Ian Benz, Associate Professor of Elementary Science Education at UNC Charlotte. And I would think that, at least at the moment, one of my favorite breakfast foods is like an omelet with almost everything in it. When you go to a dive type breakfast place, an omelet with all the goodies in there.
Zach Jackson, UCC pastor in Reading, Pennsylvania. And if you're ever in Reading, Pennsylvania, I will take you out to Tomcat Restaurant for breakfast and you will never be the same again.
Rachel Jackson, rabbi at Agudas Israel in Hendersonville, North Carolina.
So, Zach, I think you kind of skirted the question because you said breakfast food. And I was thinking a particular item. So I'm going to have to go with just, there's just nothing better than toast with scrambled eggs on top of them.
All right. Well, we are very excited to be welcoming in a special guest onto the podcast today. Our guest today is the senior pastor at...
Let me do it. Yes. Come on, let me do it. Please.
All right. You do it because I'm going to mess it up.
Wait. I thought you were going to sing. Dun. My name is Kenneth Makuakani. I am the senior pastor at Kauai Ha'o Church in Honolulu, Hawaii. And you may never be able to say it twice backwards quickly. So it's Kauai Ha'o Church in Honolulu.
Kenneth, you there?
Oh, no.
We were doing so good.
I don't think you can hear us.
Anybody out there?
One eternity later.
Oh,
I got back on. I can't believe I got back on.
Hooray!
And you can hear us?
Yeah. Only when you talk.
Well, I really like this guy.
I'm sorry.
That's amazing.
Okay. I don't know.
All right.
Why did you guys leave me? If you leave me now, you take away
the greatest part Whatever. Of me.
La, la, la,
We're
la,
into yeah, singing no. today. That's great. Too bad Kendra's not here. Kendra loves to sing.
Okay, when do we start? I'm sorry.
We're good. Now we're starting. So I first met you, Kenneth, at General Synod in Baltimore, was it?
In Baltimore.
We had just tried to reboot the UCC Science and Technology Network,
yes.
As it had lost all of its funding. And so myself and a few other people tried to put together a little mixer
yes.
in someone's hotel room at the end of one of the nights, and expecting there to be like 12 people there. And I showed up, got off the elevator and opened the door, and the room was just like shoulder to shoulder, and it was amazing and full of people who said, oh my goodness, I thought I was the only one who thought these sorts of things, and just that same chorus I always hear. And I remember you coming up to me with your very gregarious self and I think you were like, it's the Zach Jackson. I met the Zach Jackson.
Yeah, of course. I was excited.
The one who approved me on Facebook, on the group.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember us having such a unique conversation that day because you were explaining to me all of the different ways that you look at science and from a different sort of perspective that's like
a
non-Western kind of perspective. But that's – and every time I try to explain it, I always end up minimalizing and maybe compartmentalizing where you're coming from. And so I don't want to do that, and I just kind of want to open it up. And maybe you can kind of just for a moment explain the way that your brain and soul works.
Oh, Zach, you know, you're ruining my hero aspect of you. I was just going to send you a cape, and I'm not going to send you a cape anymore.
Why not?
Okay, I'll send you a cape.
Okay, thank you.
What size do you take?
Aren't capes small? One size fits all?
Sure, if you want yours to drag. You know, super. What was it? Was it Superman's one? It just dragged too much the other day. Maybe he shrank. You know, old age makes you shrink down. But anyway, I get where you're coming from, because that's exactly the point. We from all parts of the world have a different perspective. So, for instance, I'm on Hawaii Island, and our largest mountain here is called Mauna Kea. And I'm in Hilo. And when I look at Mauna Kea, I can explain to you exactly what I see from my vantage point. Unfortunately, my vantage point isn't the only point. And so if I go on the other side of the island, my perspective is totally different about the same thing. And we're looking at the same thing, but from different perspectives. And so when we were talking in Baltimore about things, you know, about science, about the stars, about all of these other things, I just look at it from a different vantage point. So there are what we call shared knowledge to create a wider scope of what truth is. And so my understanding of science goes from my vantage point of what I see in my part of the world. And I think that's what we started with in our conversation. Don't all speak at one time.
Well, that was a beautiful analogy. I was thinking also, so as you were saying that, you were talking one side of a mountain versus another side of a mountain, but I was picturing it slightly differently and more of a prism, right? Maybe a dodecahedron kind of prism where...
Whoa.
Yeah, she goes deep quick.
I only speak English. Can we like...
12-sided.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, why didn't you just say 12-sided?
No, dodecahedron is way better.
A dodeki. Like a double-decker bus or something.
That's it. That's it. Because we all have different favorite things, and that's one of my favorite shapes, is a dodecahedron. So imagining that in prism form, not only are there the two different sides that you were talking about, Kenneth, but really the ability to see it in a myriad of different ways. And
yes.
And I want to make sure that as we're saying that there's lots of different ways of seeing these things, we shared our favorite breakfasts, but we have not yet heard what your favorite breakfast is.
Oh my gosh. You mean lost in the conversation?
Oh, okay, goodness. So, you can just return the cape you were going to buy for me at this point. Yeah.
It's a joint cape.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, my favorite breakfast is anything that you put in front of my face at the time. we don't really have breakfast foods. I mean, we do have breakfast foods because it was brought from the mainland. Oh, that's a good point. Can I... Swerve from
go
mainland?
For it. Wormhole.
Okay, so in Hawaii, you know, everybody's on the continent. They call it the continent, the United States, and you call it some of you call it the mainland. But for us, Hawaii is the mainland. This is our mainland, and you are out. So it's another part of the perspective as we're going to start to speak. So our mainland is different from your mainland. Our life is different from your life because we have a very finite land mass. And so the care that we have for that finite land mass is even more pronounced, because if we cut off a mile of ourselves, that's a huge chunk. If you cut off a mile of California, who cares? Nobody would know. I mean, really.
Well, people in California might know, but maybe not so much Kansas.
Okay. So cut off a chunk of Kansas, and nobody would know.
Sorry, Adam. Yeah.
Nobody would know. And so we have to be real cognizant of how we treat our aina, our land here in Hawaii, because if we don't, we're going to be gobbled up by the ocean, which is not a bad thing, but it's going to happen one day. It's just I'm not waiting for it in my lifetime to happen. Back to my breakfast. Wow. This is going all over.
The breakfast that you're skipping to be with us today.
Yes. So anyway, no, I'm not going to skip it. I'm going to have it later on.
Just postpone.
Postpone.
Yes, in my... I forgot the word, dextrahedral concise.
Dodecahedron.
Yeah, that thingy. So, and now that I'm there with breakfast, I was just going to talk about how human beings think of dimensional. You know, we have one, two, and even three dimensional, but most human beings don't know that there are a plethora of dimensions, which is why I love that new word that I can't even say right now, because it gives us, you say 12. What if we did 12 dimensional thinking? That would be unbelievable how all of us would come to a really greater understanding of what we are looking at or talking about or feeling more, the sense of feeling. And we wouldn't have to look at each other. All we would need to do is breathe. And that 12 dimensional thing would just encompass us as individuals. Hmm. Period.
That's fascinating.
So you didn't answer the question though.
I know. Okay, any food that you put in front of my face, and we do have restaurants that unfortunately give so much that you could feed a family of four, but in Hawaii we choose to eat it all of ourselves, you know. We don't want to share. And you know, and because we're ecologically minded, we don't ask for a takeaway box. See how?
That's good of you.
I know.
So conscientious.
So we had talked a couple weeks back. It was one of our first episodes. We were talking about times when science and religion butt up against each other, where competing authorities that don't acknowledge the other one's authority come up against each other.
Yes.
And the topic of Mauna Kea came up because there was some new gigantic telescope that was they're trying to build up there. And I think this is like the 13th telescope or something that they're trying to put up there because it's in the perfect location for seeing this very specific thing. And there's been protests, and then there have been, I think, protests of the protests, and just it's been fairly contentious. And we talked a little bit about that, but none of us are there, and none of us understand really the heart and soul of the people of Hawaii. So I was wondering if you could maybe expound a little bit on what's going on there and what's this clash and is there a hope in the future?
Sure. We have actually in Sunday or Monday's morning's paper, the front page was a giant picture of the protesters who walked through Waikiki. And Waikiki is just, it's not a long stretch of property where the hotels are located, but there were over 20,000 Hawaiians with flags and, you know, that just peacefully, like Martin Luther King did, peacefully marched through Waikiki. And so the protest that we are doing is a quiet, respectful protest. And what it is there's a difference between laws and religion. And it seems like the twain do not meet. And the laws dictate how something that is sacred now can be decommissioned, as they say, into just a thing. And so as God's great earth has been put into stewardship by us, we have, instead of using, we begin to abuse. And so the abuse is generational, and it's also monetarily driven. And so the cultural people, we're all cultural, but my Hawaiian people here have just gotten fed up with eons of misuse and abuse. And it all starts, obviously, with that 1893 overthrow of our government, of our sovereignty, of our way of living. And then it gets bashed more and more. And the only reason religion and government intersect is because the missionaries came here in 1820, and then that whole idiom of they came to do good Instead, they did great. And they took a lot of the land and they commodified a lot of the industries. Whereas, and because Hawaiians don't value money, because we just use what we need, like my ice box is the ocean. And all I need are two fishes. So I'm just grabbing two fishes from my icebox or refrigerator for my meal today. I don't need any more than that. So we don't have the sense of hoarding. We don't have the sense of overusing and abusing. Whereas in an economic model, you want to use for you, and then you also want to save for the next day. Well, we don't have that kind of mentality in our head. So we don't even, back then, we don't even own land because it's like a life tenure. Hmm. You know, you use the land, and when you pass away, it gets put back into our so-called government, and it gets redistributed to somebody else. Because you can't own something that was here before you and is here after you're gone. That makes no sense. And and because of that, that is sacred. But we use everything in conjunction because, well, I'm going to go all over the map with this because it's not about Mauna Kea. It's about a lifestyle. So, for instance, one of my friends wrote a doctoral paper on the hydrocyclical. Oh, I like that. It's almost like 12th dimension. The hydrocyclical movement of water. So, water is in the ocean. So, what if you looked at water from a songwriter's standpoint, where all water drops are like songs that have ever, all songs have been written. They've all been written. God gave us all of these written songs, and then it gets evaporated into clouds. The clouds come over the mountain, and it dumps it onto the mountain, and then the water comes down the mountain, and then some songwriters just grab a bucket, and they pick up whatever songs they can get, and the rest go back into the ocean from whence they came from, waiting for other songwriters to grab them. So we are the conduits of that information. So that kind of analogy is the kind of analogy we do in all of life. We use what we need to use, and the rest of it goes back into this eternal well to be used by others, not just in our generation, but by future generations. So that kind of concept allows us to know that we only use what we can use and never to abuse. So Mauna Kea, for instance, is one of those concepts where we say that is what we call our Wauakua. That's where God lives. We have so there are different stratified areas. The top is the mountain where the crown or the head of God is or sits. And then we have the mala or that land area where we can grow. You know, most of us call it the valley, where we grow all of our food, and then then you get down into the ocean where the fishes are. Well, we never go up to the mountain except to praise the divine. And you never stick anything into the head of the divine. And people don't understand that concept because this is all part of our lifestyle. So the mountain is one. You know, when the missionaries had come over and their descendants now have a large amount of land that needs to be watered, what did they do? They dammed up the rivers that was free for everybody to use for water source, and they only rediverted it to their portion, which means that no one else got water. And so we fought for that. And after like 45 years, they finally broke the dam to allow everyone else to use water rights. There are other issues around Hawaii that use and abuse a lot of what we call the natural resources in today's language. but they use a lot of natural resources for one particular group. And all of that is not economically driven, but it's, I want to use these explicatives, but it's the rich getting richer and using government officials and paying them off with payola to shut them up. And that is the crux of many of the problems I think all of the world is facing, is that the indigenous people cannot fight with rocks and sticks and stones against these giant weapons of abuse. And they're the proverbial rockets and bombs. Not real bombs, but they're using these bombs of legislation. They can change legislation to condemn a piece of property and then build a giant mall or a giant telescope or a giant factory that will seep into our water system, take away all of our endemic plants. So another part, I think it was back in 97, we were fighting against the electric company because they wanted to put another large piece of wire across the mountain because they were going to deregulate that utility. And so they wanted to be wedged in the middle as the middleman in order for them to still continue to have revenue. And so what they were going to do was poison our mountaintop, eradicating all the poisons would go down into our water table. All of our endemic plants and animals would be eradicated just so that they can make money. And so we went and we fought against that and we won the case. But it was a whole community that had, and not just the community, but the rest of the people helped the community to shut down that process, because people keep thinking that because you have money, you can pay off enough politicians so that you can get what you want in the end. And in Hawaii, we're just getting tired. We've always been tired, but we just got fed up with all of this abuse. So Mauna Kea is the latest misuse and abuse of over 25 years of putting up 15 telescopes, decommissioning 5 telescopes, and yet never once wanting to take it away. So they build knowing that they're not going to do it. They're hoping that the thing's just going to melt away or something. What does the military do with airplanes? They take it into the Arizona desert and park it. What do you do with boats? You either sink it or, it's like, what do you do with your rubbish? Well, that's rubbish up there. And they continue to over abuse the mountaintop, which is sacred. And nobody, and I mean nobody, should be telling me what is sacred. I will tell you what is sacred to me. I don't need permission to tell you what is sacred to me. Because for too many times we've been lorded over, and there is only one Lord. And that Lord said that all of creation belongs to God, and we are stewards of it. And so it is our kuleana, it is our responsibility to continue to have stewardship over it for the next generation, not for just our generation. Anyway, I'll stop for now. Sorry.
No, that was phenomenal. And I have a couple of responses. The first is just, I'm sorry. What crap?
Yes!
Stronger words. Just preferred. But it's just, I'm sorry that that is the case. And that our government, our shared government, is trampling on other peoples of our land. So just first of all, I'm sorry. Secondly, you came back around to this, but you started by saying what is sacred, and then you sort of ended by saying I define what is sacred, which I think is very powerful, because it's the person that owns it that gets to decide what its value is, not a person coming into it getting to decide. And I would, in a very sad way, one of the things that you did say, that other other peoples don't recognize the importance of this because it's more about money or, you know, there's not the value there. I think I would have to disagree only because if we actually look at the Temple Mount in Israel, which is a piece of land which different peoples have said, this is holy to me. And while there is fighting going on about the piece of land of whose holy land it is, there's no question that it is holy space. And because the world religions, the large world religions, have said, yes, we agree to that. I should qualify Western religions. Have said, yes, we agree to that. Nobody's even dare asking to run electric wires or put up a telescope there, but it's still a plot of land, right? And there still is that value to what the land is. Now, you might recognize it as a place for the divine to dwell, which, dare I say, is the same thing as the Temple Mount, right? A place for the divine to dwell, no matter how we, you know, what our then following theologies might be. So I think it's really more about the respect that is paid to something which is not like our own.
Yes. And, you know, it's that same adage. History is written by
the victors.
By the winners, right?
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. And that is, you know, when you read any book about Hawaii, you're going to read the same kind of information, because back in the 1800s, the written language was predominantly Hawaiian, and only 4 to 6% of the literature that was written at the time, 4 to 6% was in the English language. So all of the contemporary books that are written were written off of 4 to 6% of the literature. Which means that the mass majority of the information has never been used because they didn't know the language. And so how can you glean off of 4% of an information? And that's where we get this misnomer. My gosh, I'm sorry. I should be pastoral. So,
I catch myself doing that too.
Yeah, don't you? This gets me riled up.
Right? Like, you want to just attack some money lenders right now, right?
Careful there.
Turn some tables.
Careful.
Right. And so continue. I'm sorry I went off.
That's our whole purpose. Ian, did you want to?
No, I'm really enjoying listening at the moment. No questions have truly emerged, because I just find this fascinating. One thing I do want to just add in, though, is I love the perspective you're giving us to try to better understand, you know, the historical aspect to all of this, that it's not just the current situation with Mauna Kea, that there's more to it than that.
Right. Right. So for instance, back in the day, we had fish. Well, we still have them, but we don't use them anymore. But our people created fish ponds, but they created fish ponds and the outlet were rocks that allowed the small fishes to go in and out. But as the fishes got bigger, then they got stuck in the fish pond. So they would only extract what the larger fish that they needed to feast on, but they would allow the ecosystem to take care of these different species of animals that we have stewardship over. So we are one with the environment, because the environment is us. And so we don't see any difference between it, because we call ourselves Aina people or land people. Because, let's say, you know, and let me go into some Hawaiian concepts. I am a kua aina, which means, kua means back or backbone of the land. I exist because generationally, my family has been subsisting off of this land, and this land has been subsisting off of us. So if you take aina and you take the two letters and put it differently, like instead of aina, you say na'ai. Ai means to eat or to feed. And so na is a plural for the word the article the. So it feeds many. So Aina feeds many. So our Hawaiian words are integrated into a sense of complete unity where everything has a purpose and everything is used for a purpose and not misused. And so so again, kua aina, back, the back of the land. Kua, as a back, we look at the back as all of these vertebrates. That is our mo'oku'auhau, which is our genealogy. All of those different vertebrates are family generational lines going down our back. So I am made of all of those generations that have come before me. And so my backbone is all of my ancestors that are holding me up. You know, so the breadth and scope of my life is the culmination or the integration of all of those shared knowledges over the eons and generations of my family lineage. And so we move together, not just through my lifetime, but through the lifetime of all of our ancestors. And so when we, in our concept of life, we have to do things that will impact seven generations past our lifetime. That is our concept. And so therefore, people that were born in the early 1800s had me in mind, which means I was there when they were doing what they were doing to you know, I wasn't even a thought yet, but I was a thought. Because I was there as they were preparing the ground for me to walk into. And so as I am preparing the ground for seven generations past my lifetime to be walking into, and therefore they are standing next to me in spirit form. Okay. And so we, you know what I mean? And so we have to always be cognizant. And that's where that, not religious, but that's the way of life.
So, random question, why seven generations? Why the number seven? Where did that come from?
You know, that's a good question. I don't, in my family, we count five. I don't know why, but for us, lima, which means hand, it's also the number five. And so we count things in either fives or threes, or different numbers, because they have a sort of aspect. But I will definitely find out why it is seven. But it's sometimes it's the tradition, and the tradition reason gets lost. But I know that there is but I know there is an answer to it. But we always talk about it. We always talk about affecting seven generations past us. But it's almost like when God says, when Jesus told them 7 times 70, you know, that kind of thing. It's just the number that's being thrown out. You don't only take care of yourself for your generation, but you take care, because you can't even have the concept of who's going to be out there 7 generations past my lifetime. So I think that's that same kind of biblical concept.
Yeah, I think it was Wendell Berry who said that we don't so much inherit the world from our ancestors as we are borrowing it from our children.
Exactly. Oof. That's exactly right.
There's a, throwing in the Jewish stuff here, there's a story from a long time ago. I think it's Mishnah, but it might be something else. I'll find it. Very famous story about Choni the circle drawer, who in short form, he planted a carob tree, and somebody else came along and said, "Why are you planting a carob tree?" And he said, "Because you're going to be dead by the time it bears any fruit." He said, "There were carob trees when I was here, and there need to be carob trees for my grandchildren. So I'm planting them."
There we go. And that's the thought.
And it was 70 years. So that's another reason for questioning seven.
And those same kind of thought. You plant a tree so that your grandchild will have shade.
Yeah, and was it, I don't remember if it was that general synod that we met or the one before, where there was a resolution involved that involved urging the world governments to take seriously the fact that we need to be good stewards of the outer space environment as well as space on the Earth, which got a lot of laughs from people. And the butt of a lot of jokes that, wow, we have really stepped out of our bounds now that we're telling people what to do with outer space. But I see that as the fruits of the spirit that we have here, the spirit of use it, abuse it, and then throw it away. And we do that here, and we're exploiting local treasures and the world around us as if it's all going to last forever. And then we take that same spirit and we do it up in orbit. And, you know, it's a travesty how much junk we have just floating around us. Well, it's appropriate probably that, you know, Saturn has rings of ice and we have rings of junk.
And didn't they just find out that now Saturn beats Jupiter with the amount of moons that it has?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations.
Saturn is now officially the coolest planet.
Saturn was always the coolest planet.
I love the ring.
No, except for the planet that wasn't.
What, you mean the ninth planet?
Yes.
The, of course. The one, the mysterious planet where the Cybermen live. If you're a Doctor Who fan, no? Okay, that's fine.
Wow, you folks are really out of it.
And silence.
Yeah, I don't know what these people were talking about.
He's a very specific kind of nerd.
So for instance, Toledo, Ohio, right? In 2013, did a legislation that gave Lake Erie the same human rights.
Yeah.
In Aotearoa, in New Zealand, the Mauna over there has the same rights as a human being. I mean, it's and all over different parts of the world are starting to do the same thing because people are now realizing that if we don't take ownership of our land, that it will be lost forever. I mean, I created a three-step, which my ancestors created it, and I remembered. How do we do a three-step? We used to say, let's take care of our land, right? Well, you can't take care of something that you don't really care for or you have no ownership value in. So that means that's the middle step. The first is that you have to value it, and we call it pilina, or you have to have a relationship. So your family is a relationship. The one you fall in love with is a relationship. And so whatever relationship and how you get into that relationship is now going to give you the value to take care of it. And as you take care of it, the third step is to have the responsibility to understand how to take care of that relationship. And so as we do it in a human form, we also have to do it in all creation form. And so I love the idea that all of these different places in the world have recognized it and now are moving to get that kind of thought into the minds of their people as well as into the thoughts of other people who have, what is that wonderful word, diaspora or whatever?
Yeah, you know? Diaspora.
Yeah, who have run away from their culture because we are all cultural people. Whether we know our culture or we don't know our culture. And the ones who have run away, or because of whatever reasons, have now mushed somebody else's culture with them or other cultures with them and forgot who they are. And so I think people just need to reclaim who they are so that in their purest form, they begin to find the truth and the path of who they are as a person.
So what's it going to take to change the way that people see the world around us? Because we, like, physically, we literally cannot continue to treat the world like a buffet, like a commodity to be consumed, that every mountaintop is fair game for the next progress of this, that, and the other, and every sacred land is fine and dandy to put pipelines all throughout, and we can just dig stuff up and blow up the tops of mountains because whatever. Like, what's it going to take to bring us to a place where we bring us back to a place where we used to be?
How about the government giving each of us $1 million?
Nah.
Well, that would be cool. Don't get me wrong.
Counter argument. That might cause more trouble.
Yeah, I don't see that really working.
But, well, but you know what?
It would be so much fun. It would be so much fun trying.
Well, I'll tell you. Constantine tried to do something like that, and he completely destroyed the economy, which is why I have a Roman coin with Constantine on it, and it cost me like $15 on Amazon because there's so many of them.
Yeah!
Inflation.
This conversation is nuts. What's going on here?
Okay, so besides...
Welcome to the podcast.
So I one of the ways that I was translating what you were saying, Kenneth, in my head was being stewards of the land and being in relationship with them. And all I could hear was the five love languages of land. Right. And
why five? Why five?
Because there's this very classic, not classic, it's not classic. It's been around for like 20 years. The five love languages, where it says in relationship with a spouse. Does a person need physical affection? Do they want quality time, words of affirmation, small gifts or acts of service, right? Things like that. And knowing what your partner, that you're in relationship with actually hears as love really makes a difference.
What are Earth's five love languages?
What are Earth's five love languages that we can then say, this is the way that I can give, right? Because we also recognize that we're part of this relationship. And so if the Earth is saying, yeah, all of them sound great to me, but we're not capable, what would those be? How could we then be in, for those of us that don't have that theology, for those of us that are just watching this painfully unfold, how can we then be allies and advocates?
Okay, I love that. So some years ago, I was commissioned to write a song for an area on this particular island that I'm on right now, and it was way up in the mountains. So I flew in from Honolulu and came here, and the land manager took me on his four-wheel drive up into the mountains for a joyride. And he left me there for 6 hours, the dirty guy. I was stuck up in the mountains, and I'm going, what am I doing here in the bushes? You know, I was sitting down, and all I saw were rocks and trees, and it rained a little bit, and then it got sunny again, and, you know, there were little animals running around, and I was thinking, man, what a waste of my time. And then after 2 hours of complaining, I just shut up. I'm sorry I used that foul language. I was still. And when I became still, I saw a tree that reminded me of a hermit, someone who wants to live by themselves. And then I saw a group of trees, and that reminds me of small communities. And then I saw a larger patch. We call them kipuka. They're like larger communities. And the larger communities, and all of these were endemic plants, which means that they weren't invasive. They let each other live, and they just lived together in unison. And then I came, after about 4 hours, I was walking around in the bushes, and I came to this large tree, and it was like maybe 120 feet high. I wrapped my arms around it, and I went around, and it took me five hug times before I got back to where I started. And I went, holy smokes. So after 6 hours, the guy showed up again, and he goes, oh, there you are. And I got in, and I asked him, how old is that tree? He says, I don't know, 450, 500 years old.
Wow.
And I went, wait a minute. There must have had a ton of lava flows in this area. He says, Yes, and I forgot the amount he said. And I went, how could this tree live? He said, it was just fortunate. So it saw lifetimes pass before its eyes. And what it just made me realize after I sat was that what the earth is telling us is, you know how to take care of me? Just leave me the hell alone, because I can take care of myself. And no, really, you know, and that I think is what we try to do. It's like we try to repair the earth when it's in God's time and it can repair itself because the great creator made it such. You know, we want not to have things become extinct. And so we try to grab the last two of the species to mate them until they get tired of each other, you know? And then the species can live on. But what if that's not what the creator said that is supposed to happen? Maybe that evolution is supposed to happen so that something else, like what I heard, where we are taking care of the earth for our children. What happens if extinction was part of that thing? And all we needed to do was leave it alone.
Of all species that have ever lived are extinct. So,
oh, this is going to not come out right.
Oh, then please just
you may go to the restroom. Go ahead. We'll carry on.
No. I did that before we got on. Thank
you. Oh, yeah. TMI.
Professional. Totally derailed me.
I love our people.
You were about to say something offensive, and that was going to make people mad, I think.
Yeah. So if we see that 99% of things have been extinct, according to you, Zach, and perhaps in one of your understandings, Kenneth, that that's kind of the way that it should be. That's the way the divine, the great creator has desired it to be, right? Especially if we just leave it alone. It will do its thing, or God will do its thing, and you know we don't need to interrupt. So is there a larger scheme then? Is there something larger to what we're dealing with now? Right? If that is part of the larger picture, is there something that then says, okay, humans, it's about your time because you're kind of destroying everything else, so maybe this is part of the extinction. Maybe you're up next. And so that's why this climate change. And because we know that the world will exist and species in one form or another will exist no matter what happens to the oceans, no matter what happens to the temperature, no matter, you know, if we just get clouds all the time, something will exist. It won't be us.
Horseshoe crabs.
Turtles, sharks, and Twinkies.
Horseshoe crabs have outlived every mass extinction. They'll be fine.
Excellent. Okay.
God bless.
Horseshoe crabs. You know, good for them. Maybe that's the image of God. Anyway, maybe is that part of this then? Is this part of our making ourselves go extinct? And that's okay.
I've read this book once. It's called The Bible.
Only once.
You know, I hear it's tough.
It's tough.
There are parts.
But you know, one year I decided to read it backwards. And so I started from the end of Revelation, and I started reading it backwards. It was way cooler because, you know, I hate not knowing the answer. You know, it's almost like going to a movie and then right before the end, you know, Your spouse goes, I gotta go. Come on, let's go. And you go, wait, I have to find it. No, and you gotta go. And it's just so unfulfilling. I mean, I just feel unfulfilled because I don't know what the end is. And so I decided to read the Bible backwards. And the answers just keep flowing out. So yes, there is an answer to these. Well, as far as I'm concerned, because I I'm settled with what the answer was for me. So I think we all have to find that completeness within ourselves. And us who are sitting around this proverbial table seem to more than likely agree that what the Bible contains is the answers to ask more questions that will suffice for us. So we get this thing called Keala Pono or Ma'ave Pono, which means a righteous path. And each of us has to run through our own righteous path. We can give each other information, but that's just information. We have to regurgitate it in our own lives and walk our lives separately. So there is no cookie cutter answer for what you're asking. There is only more questions to the answers that we give. And I think that in itself is the completeness of what life for us exists as.
Yeah. The Earth's history, as far as I can tell, is a balancing act. And when you if you put too much weight on one side, the other side goes up and
it's
inhospitable to some creatures who then can't adapt fast enough. And, you know, if we have done this to ourselves, and if we go extinct because of this, you know, it will be our own doing, but it will just be the Earth finding balance again. And, you know, if we're going to be our own asteroid, then so be it. Or like the virus that gives you a fever and then the heat kills off the virus. It's kind of exactly what the Earth would be doing.
Right. To get rid of the poison that's in us, the body provides a fever, which the body itself cannot withstand, hoping to kill away the virus. Same with anaphylaxis, right? Or asphyxiation, right? Trying to get rid of it. But by doing that, it ends up dying. So
yeah,
it's like, but we've put an elephant on the seesaw.
But because we cannot, you can't end an episode on something like that.
Oh God, no! Please don't.
No, of course not. You gotta have some hope, right? Right? Because it's not
hope is good.
It's not. We are not already in a fever that is going to kill off everything forever. We are perhaps that tree that has survived lava flows and has watched things come and go. And hopefully, as our rings are growing, we are growing in wisdom and we are able to turn it around, and we're able to start seeing the world around us as the world within us and make that necessary change. And not just like a change of action, but a change of heart, of knowing that we are one with the material world, physically, literally. We are all the same atoms. And I think that your voice, Kenneth, and the kind of insight that you have, which is, you know, in many ways an insight that those of us who come from Western traditions forgot a couple thousand years ago, elevating your voice and that wisdom, I think personally will make the difference. So I want to buy you a cape.
For breakfast.
For breakfast.
Oh my God. I'll eat it.
I can buy you crepes for breakfast. But
oh.
No.
I'd love it. I'll eat it all, even though I'm supposed to share with 12 other people.
But you don't have a to-go box and you just use what's in front of you.
Exactly. I love it.
So, Kenneth, do you have any words of hope or any final thoughts on our way out?
You know, we keep thinking that hope is something that we got to attain or have to reach for, but hope has always been here. It's the perspective, like when how we started with that Hextra Seagull, whatever that 12th thing that she was talking about, into my perspective of a mountain. It's the same thing. That's hope. Hope to know that someone else has a shared knowledge that will add to mine, that will give us a clearer perspective. That's the hope. And so if we can attain the mindset that we are not everything, but we are part of God's great creation, then that means that everything in creation will add to that story. And as storied people, that's the hope of the world.
This has been episode 13 of the Down the Wormhole podcast. If you like what you hear, tell your friends, leave us a review wherever it is that you listen. Check out downthewormhole.com for contact information, social media, and copious show notes. Next week, we are wrapping up our series on church and state by talking about the Satanic Temple in particular and secular religions in general. Looking ahead, we will be starting a new series on evolution, followed by a series on human origins. We have some really exciting guests lined up and a lot of science to dive into. We are super excited. Thanks again to Kenneth for taking a very early hour out of his day to talk to us. And now,
back to my breakfast.